This story is called Misguided Directions. Dr. Nathan Bork sat in his home office scanning the files of patients that he was about to meet. The office had a comforting study atmosphere with soft leather chairs, fully stacked bookshelves, and high ceilings that imparted the feeling of security without being claustrophobic. He puffed on his pipe as he examined the file of Marjorie Bombasco. When the doorbell rang, he glanced at his watch. Marjorie was, as usual, a little bit early. Dr. Bork ushered her into his office and offered her one of the soft leather chairs. "What do you think we should talk about this evening, Marjorie?" She furrowed the eyebrows of her round face. "I tried to go to the Grand Union this week, but I couldn't make it. I used to go there every day with my Aunt Dottie. But now, even when I think about getting in the car and driving a few blocks, I start to feel one of my spells coming on." "How did it feel when it was just starting?" "There's a voice inside me that says, 'You can't do this. What's the matter with you?' And then I feel myself starting to lose control." "Whose voice is it that says that to you, Marjorie?" "I don't know what you mean. It's my voice, I think. Then the fear that something very awful is going to happen as soon as I leave the house starts to build up inside me. Then I look for some way to put the trip off. This week, I called my son Ronald and started a fight with him, and then I told myself that I was much too nervous to do anything except go to work because of the state that he had worked me up into." "Why do you think that you called your son?" "Because he used to be the one that helped me to get around, and now he just stays away from me. Doctor, I feel like I'm going crazy. I feel like one of these times I'm going to start screaming or shaking and not be able to stop, and that they're going to have to come and take me away and lock me up someplace. Do you feel that's what will happen if you do go out?" "I don't know. Maybe. Some of the things that I've done when I've had these spells would certainly make people think that I'm crazy and should be put away." "Marjorie, first of all, I want to assure you that you are not going to go crazy or have to be put somewhere. What you are suffering from takes a heavy toll on you. But you are the very sane, my dear." Dr. Bork smiled, and the gray-bearded man's expression seems to smooth some of the lines that had creased in around her eyes and mouth. "Now, let's get back to this voice that tells you what you aren't going to be able to do. Tonight, I'd like to concentrate on where you think that voice comes from." She looked baffled. "It comes from me." "Yes, of course it does. But do you think that it comes from you as a grown woman?" "I don't know what you mean." "Let's talk about who the first person was that told you you couldn't do things." "My grandmother," said Marjorie. Her face seemed to take on a little girl's look. "Can you remember anything specifically that she told you you weren't supposed to do?" "That's a hard question. She raised me. There were lots of things." Think of something that was really important to you that she told you you could not do." "Ask about my father," said Marjorie, almost automatically. Bork nodded. He had expected that response. "What else?" When I was small, she never wanted to let me go outside to play. Marjorie's face was interested and surprised at her own recollection now. I remember her saying that I had to be careful that they didn't come and get me. Well, who was going to come and get you? I don't know, but I remember thinking that it also had something to do with my father. Why? I don't really know. But after they found out that I went to the prison, everyone was very angry at me. Let's talk a little about the day that you went to the prison. Okay. How old were you? I think I was 15, maybe younger. What made you decide to go there? I heard my grandmother and my aunts talking one day when they thought I was out of the apartment. Really, I was out of the apartment, but I used to hide under the kitchen window and listen to what they were saying. Why did you do that? Because I wanted to know things, and somewhere along the line, I figured out that they weren't going to say anything when they thought I could hear. So I used to sneak. This one day, I heard them talking about how Louis Fox and Charlie Dresden were going to be getting out of prison soon, and that 14 years had been a very long time, but that they wanted to be careful. Then I went to the library and started looking through newspapers of 14 years ago, and that's when I first learned about my father. What did you learn? I learned that my father had gotten involved with some pretty ugly people. I remember thinking that they must have forced him to do awful things that the paper said he might have done. What do you mean by might have done? His name was never mentioned. The man that I thought was my father was always referred to as the third assailant. What made you think that was your father? A lot of things that I had put together from bits and pieces of conversation, but mostly it was just a feeling that I had. So, you went to the prison to see these two men? Marjorie smiled. When I think about it now, it seems like I must have been a different person. I played hooky from school and took a bus down to Penn Station and got on the train that went to Rahway. She stopped and shook her head. It's funny, the things that you remember. I remember what I was wearing. I had on black and white saddle shoes and a brown coat that must have been given to me by my Aunt Dottie. I remember the conductor asked me where I was going. She paused and cleared her throat and met the doctor's eyes. My grandmother always taught me to speak up clearly when I had been asked a question. I remember the conductor saying something like, "And where will you be going today, miss?" And me speaking right up loud and clear and saying, "Rahway State Prison, please." Then I remember feeling that I must have said something terribly wrong, because everyone had turned around to look at me. I remember being embarrassed because my dollar bill was very crumpled when I took it out and gave it to the conductor. He took a long time to straighten it before he punched my ticket. It was uncomfortable, but I was just a kid, so I sat there and waited for it to be over. What do you remember about the prison? I haven't thought about that day in a very long time, but right now I feel like I remember everything. There was stone and metal everywhere, and a strong smell that burned my throat. I remember that the room they kept me waiting in had a very high ceiling with windows at the very top of the wall. I remember thinking that it must be part of the punishment to put the windows in a place where nobody could see out of them. Marjorie paused in her story and opened her purse. She took out a pack of cigarettes, and Dr. Bourque lit it for her. She looked around at the bookshelves and smoked for a few seconds. "Do you really think that going back over this old stuff will help me now?" "Yes, I do, Marjorie. But it was so long ago. I never had any trouble traveling then." "Conditions like yours don't start overnight. They take a long time to be created and become so full-blown. But I don't want you to lose your train of thought. What else do you remember about the day at the prison?" "I remember this big Irish-looking guard came into the room and the echoes of his voice when he spoke. He told me that Charles Dresden said he didn't know who I was and that he didn't want to see me, but that Louis Fox had agreed to speak to me." "Did you actually see Louis Fox?" "Oh, yes. I remember him sitting on a bench and looking at me without meeting at my eyes. I remember thinking that everything was very clean and that it wasn't dirty the way that I imagined a prison would be. He was a large man, but his voice was no more than a whisper. He thanked me for calling him Mr. Fox and said that I was the first person in 14 years who had called him that, and that he appreciated it." "Was Mr. Fox able to tell you anything about your father?" "At first, he pretended to not know who Larry Fisher was. But when I told him I was Eileen's daughter and that my mother had died 6 years ago, he said that he was sorry. He said that he had no idea what happened to Larry, and that he didn't know how he possibly could help me. I remember starting to cry and asking him to just tell me one thing that was true about my father. I told him my aunts and grandmother had never been willing to mention my father's name, and that I didn't even know what he looked like. He said that some things were better left alone, and that I had no way of knowing if Larry Fisher, who wasn't even sure that he knew, was even my father. But I begged and carried on a little. I think that he felt sorry for me, or that I made him nervous, because finally he said that he would be getting out in a few weeks, and that he could tell me when he got out. I told him that my grandmother and I didn't have a phone, and that she taught me that telephones were for rich and important people that other people needed to talk to. Then he asked for my address, and I got scared." "Why did you get scared, Marjorie? Was it because he was a prisoner?" "No, that wasn't it. I was frightened they would come to my house and that my grandmother would find out what I had done, and that I would be in big trouble. My Aunt Dottie was always telling me that I created big problems for my grandmother, and that I was lucky if they hadn't put me in an orphanage a long time ago. I guess that I was afraid that if Louis Fox ever showed up at the door, that would be the last straw. I told him that I wasn't allowed to tell anybody where I lived. I remember that he smiled when I said that, and that he had missing teeth that made his smile look scary. Then he gave me the phone number where he was going to be living and told me to call him in 2 months. What else do you remember about that day?" "Not very much. I got caught for not going to school and told my grandmother that I had gone roller skating. She called me a dirty little skunk. My grandmother didn't curse and made me go with her to church for every one of the prayer meetings for the next 2 weeks." "Did you ever see Louis Fox again?" "I called the number that he gave me 2 months later. He said that he had found out what happened to my father and that I should meet him at the Jewish cemetery on 4th Street that next Monday afternoon. I cut school again. It never occurred to me to be frightened to meet this man in a desolate place like a cemetery. When I think about things like that now, I must have been another person or something. Perhaps you were just very naive. It was a cold day, and I got there very early and had to wait for a long time. When I finally saw him coming down the street, I wasn't even sure it was the same man. He had on a suit and a hat and a very large tan overcoat. And he was with this Jewish man who was all dressed in black and had a long beard and hair hanging down the sides of his face. Mr. Fox didn't introduce me to this man and spoke to him in a language that I didn't understand. We went into the cemetery. The stones were large, not like the way it is in Jewish cemeteries today. I remember when we walked down the rows that some of the stones were taller than me. I remember having this feeling that I was in another kind of prison, that these men were kind of guards too. I thought that this was a prison that nobody ever got out of, and I had this urge to turn around and run out of there and go back home to my grandmother. But I had come so far and felt so close to actually finding out something real about my father that I forced myself to keep walking. Marjorie, is this the first time that you remember feeling that you had to run home in order to be safe? I don't know. I never really thought about it like that. All I remember was that it was so cold that the wind was blowing through the spaces in the stones, and that my hands were red, that the man in black was leading the way, and that he walked slowly, and it seemed like it was taking forever. Then what happened? We stopped in front of this stone, and it wasn't as big as some of the others. Mr. Fox handed the rabbi some money, and the rabbi opened the book that he was carrying and began to read from it. Was it a prayer book? It must have been, because he was singing and swaying back and forth, and I remember wondering why neither of the men had taken off their hats if they were going to pray. I had never heard anyone making sounds like this man. Then while he was still doing it, Mr. Fox turned to me and said, "This is your father's grave, Marjorie." I couldn't find out too much about how he died because it was a long time ago. But I will tell you that he was a good man who just wound up getting some unlucky breaks. Then I looked at the stone. I stared at the name. Lawrence Fisher, 1871 to 1930. It was like a siren went off in my head, and I said, "This can't be my father's grave, Mr. Fox. I know it can't be." He said, "This is your father's grave, Marjorie." I cried and hollered. This man was much older than my father would have been. My father was your age, Mr. Fox. He just insisted that this was Larry Fisher's grave, and maybe all that it proved was that I wasn't Larry's daughter. Then I got angry and said, "Why did you bring me here to do this to me? Is it because my father helped you kill that man?" His face was puffier than I remembered it being back in prison. He stooped over and brought it down close to me and whispered in this fierce voice, "This is your father's grave. Leave it alone. Go ahead and live your life. That's all I can tell you." I looked up at the man in the black suit, and he had his eyes closed and was making sounds and swaying back and forth like he didn't know either of us was there. I remember shouting, "Why can't someone just tell me the truth?" Then I was running, and I ran all the way to the bus stop. And when I got off the bus, I ran all the way back to our apartment on Gillette Place. I remember how good it felt to be home, and how I didn't care if I ever found out the truth, as long as I could be home and feel safe. Well, Marjorie, I think we have both learned quite a lot tonight. I want to follow this up next week. That was the signal that the session was over. Marjorie reached for her purse and took out her checkbook. I feel so guilty about paying you so little for seeing me, Dr. Bourque. That's the one thing that we don't ever have to talk about, Marjorie. Dr. Bourque ushered her to the door and watched as she walked to her car. Her husband was waiting. When she got into the car, George didn't ask anything about her appointment, and Marjorie felt relieved to be on the way home. On the occasion of her next weekly appointment, Marjorie arrived at Dr. Bourque's office carrying a rather large, thick folder. She placed it on the desk next to her chair and lit a cigarette. "How was your week, Marjorie?" Marjorie stared at the psychologist before she began to speak. Her eyes were dark. "I'm not quite sure how to answer you, Dr. Bourque. Let's just say that our last visit had quite an impact on me." "I was hoping that it might. I've begun to search for my father again." Bourque was unable to hide the look of surprise that splashed across his face. This was taking a direction that he hadn't expected. "What do you mean?" "I couldn't sleep after leaving here last week. I couldn't get those images of the cemetery and the prison out of my head. I couldn't get away from the feeling that there must be some way to find out what happened to my father. So I've begun to check through old newspapers at the library." "And what did you find?" "Quite a bit. Some things that I knew and then forgot about. Some things that I'm not sure that I ever wanted to know." "Why did you decide to restart this search?" "Because whenever I start thinking about my father, I get this feeling that he might still be alive someplace, and that he might not even know that I ever existed. Or he might not be able to bring himself to find me after all of this time." "Marjorie, asking about your father was just one way of going back to your childhood and trying to find out some keys that will help you to make yourself whole. What happened back then really isn't that important today." "Would you be able to say that if we were talking about your father, Dr. Bourque?" Bourque looked down at his legal pad. "I don't know how to answer you about that, but let's try something else. Tonight, let's talk about the other members of your family." Marjorie stared at the folder. "I was really hoping that we could continue to talk about my father." Bourque could hear the stress in her voice. Perhaps he could turn this obsessive feeling into a useful tool. Perhaps the feeling itself was a kind of key to some of the answers that they were seeking. "Let's talk about your grandmother. What kind of a woman was she?" Marjorie slid her palm across the top of the folder. "If I had to sum it up, I would say that she was brokenhearted." "Why would you say that?" "I don't know, but as a child, I can never remember her laughing. And whenever she did smile, there was a lot of sadness in her face. Maybe it was because she was sick. Maybe it was because we were so poor. Maybe it was because her children were such a disappointment to her. Or because her husband died when she was still a young woman. I don't know. She never wanted to talk about her life." "Where was she born?" "North Adams, Massachusetts. She was a Lowell. she graduated from Cheshire Academy. I'm sure that spending her life in furnished rooms and basement apartments was not what she dreamed of when she was young. Do you think that she loved you? I'm absolutely sure of it. Or at least I used to be. Who knows now? Maybe she just felt sorry for me. She said that we were poor people who would never get ahead in the world. Did she ever hit you? Not really. She'd tell my Aunt Dottie when I did something that was really wrong, and my aunt would hit me. Tell me about your aunt. She's not an easy person to sum up. I remember wishing and praying that she was my mother. I used to ask her all the time to tell me if she was really my mother. What would she say? She'd say that she wished that she was, but that it just wasn't true. Marjorie shook her head and her bottom lip began to tremble. She had style and charm, but she could be so cruel. I gave her a home and the best that I had to offer. And what I can't seem to forget or forgive is that for all those years, she never told me the truth about my father or my mother or anything else. Tears were running down Marjorie's face now. Dr. Bork handed her a box of tissues and said, "It will be fine if you wish to take a minute before we continue." "No, that's okay. There's nothing that a minute is going to change anymore." She knew everything, and she probably created half of the lies that I spent my life trying to unravel. Did I ever tell you that the name on my mother's headstone was a name that I grew up with, and that it was an alias? Do you know that I was named after the Fisher Piano Company? Who knows if it was a name that my father actually used? My mother was never married, and I was too much of an embarrassment to all of them to bury her or to raise me with our real names. So they just made something up. So, of course, I believed it until I was old enough to realize that there was something phony about it. I only wish that I'd been smart enough to figure out why they had put it together in such a complete package of lies and called it my past. It's been difficult to find out, a little at a time, that everything that you've been told about yourself was a fiction created for the sake of what other people might think. Marjorie, tell me some of the things that they told you. Marjorie laughed bitterly. None of what they told me was true. They told me that my father didn't care about us, and that's why he left us. They told me that my mother had cancer of the throat. They told me that they were all good people who had lived good lives. It was all bullshit. Marjorie startled herself by the use of the word. Her face flushed. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to use that kind of language. Maybe it's time you called it what it was, Marjorie. Maybe bullshit is the right word. At any rate, you never have to apologize for anything that you say in this office, and you will never have to worry about what words you use to express it. Thank you, Dr. Bork. My grandmother didn't believe in cursing. I never heard her use the Lord's name in vain in my life. When she was really angry, she would call me a dirty little skunk. What about your mother? I don't remember. I can't remember how she spoke. She had these tubes in her throat, and all I can remember was the horrible gurgling and gagging sounds that she used to make when she had to change them. Had her voice box been removed? I guess so. They told me that she'd gotten cancer. They used to tell me stories about how the peddlers would sell her rotten food because she wasn't able to smell anything. And then I came to find out through the newspapers that it wasn't cancer at all. Marjorie began sobbing. How did your mother lose her voice? She was beaten, okay? Someone beat her so badly that they crushed her larynx and that it had to be removed. I'm very sorry, Marjorie. That's not the half of it. She had an arrest record. She was involved with the murder of some bus driver in Belleville. She was finally beaten again and dumped in some doctor's office where she bled to death on his floor. Who knows what she was? She certainly wasn't very interested in being my mother. She died when I was 9 years old, but I never lived with her. I can remember her taking me to the movies once in my life. We took apart a bracelet that was made of nickels and went to the movies. That's it. Now I would like to stop talking about her, please. Marjorie, I can only imagine how upsetting it must be for you to tell about all of this that you know. If I knew of a less painful way to help you, I would certainly take it. But the real truth is that until you face who you really are, you are never going to be able to face the problems that you have.